Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Judy Collins. Her Grammy Award-winning interpretations have filled more than 50 albums and helped launch the careers of some of our greatest contemporary songwriters. She's also a filmmaker, an author, and an activist. Judy Collins has a new CD, and before she comes to the Columbia Festival of the Arts for a concert on Saturday night, she's my guest today on Midday. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has a review of Twisted Melodies, the one-man show at Baltimore Center Stage. Judy Collins and Judy Russick. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up a little later, a conversation with theater critic Judy Russick about the new show at Baltimore Center Stage. But we begin today with another Judy, a Judy whose career has spanned more than six decades and whose interpretations of music from traditional folk music to the singer-songwriters of the 1960s to the American Songbook have delighted and inspired audiences around the globe. Judy Collins joins me today on Midday. She maintains a busy schedule of concerts, including an appearance at the Columbia Festival of the Arts on Saturday night. She has also, over the years, been involved with many other projects like books and movies and activism on behalf of causes near and dear to her. Her latest CD is called A Love Letter to Stephen Sondheim, and Judy Collins joins us on the line from her home in New York. Judy, it's good to talk to you again. Welcome back to Midday.
Thank you so much. Glad to be on the show. Appreciate it.
So we talked the last time a couple of years ago. You were in Baltimore playing the Meyerhoff, and you had just released an album called Strangers Again, which was duets.
Yeah.
And you have been busy ever since, because you this is like there's two more albums in between then and now.
Yes, it's amazing what's happened. The album after Strangers Again, of course, is very exciting because I wrote and recorded an album with Ari Hest called Silver Skies Blue, and it garnered us a Grammy nomination this year.
It did. Congratulations.
And then I've been wanting to, for years, record a Sondheim album of all the other songs that I love, and I was able to do that, so that's now out as well.
It's your first Grammy nomination in 40 years.
Yes.
That's wild.
I had a whole bunch in the 60s and 70s and then got an award for a Grammy for Set in the Clowns. But and was also had a Grammy for Both Sides Now. So 40 years. That was good. I hadn't had a nomination in 40 years, and Ari is not yet 40.
Right. That's right. He wasn't even around when you had your last nomination. That's fantastic. And, of course, you know, there are a million reasons to do an album of all Sondheim tunes.
Yeah.
I wonder, what are your reasons?
Well, of course, my main reason is that I made a hit out of Set in the Clowns, and I got this little letter from Mr. Sondheim saying, thanks for my first, and it turns out my only, top 10 hit. It actually was top 10 on Billboard in 1975 and also 1977. But I've always been intrigued by these other songs. I recorded a couple of them on albums in the 80s, Greenfinch and Pretty Women. But I wanted to get my hands on these songs because they're so wonderful and they're so intriguing, and I would want to do for them what happened and what I was able to do for Set in the Clowns, which is to expose them to the audience as Judy Collins songs and as better-known Sondheim songs.
Let's listen to a little bit of the 1975 version of Send in the Clowns, which is, as we just discussed, you won a Grammy for.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Where are the clowns?
Isn't it blue? It's such an amazing song. Me here at last on the ground, you in midair.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so fantastic. And it's a
beautiful,
iconic performance. I mean, you know, Mr. Sondheim writes this beautiful tune, which means so much in the musical in which it is placed, A Little Night Music, because it's so revelatory about the character. And let's listen now to a little bit of your version of Send in the Clowns on this latest album, The Love Letter to Stephen Sondheim.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Send in the clowns. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing round, one who can't move. But where are the clowns? Send in the clowns.
So, Judy, I have to tell you, in my other life, I'm a musician. I'm a conductor, and I've conducted opera and choral music and orchestral music and ballet. I know a lot of singers, a whole lot of singers. They've sung at La Scala and the Met and City Opera of blessed memory. And you sound beautiful. And this record is terrific. I just love the whole album. And you sound so great. I got to tell you, I mean, it's phenomenal. And here's another thing. You recorded Send in the Clowns in 1975 in E-flat major, and it's still in E-flat major. There are a lot of singers who, at your status in life, in your mid-70s, who would take it down a notch, you know, D major, C major, B-flat. I mean, they'd get it. They would pump it down so that the high notes weren't quite as high. Your chops are incredible. What's your secret? There are a lot of singers who would like to know how to keep it going into their 70s.
The simple answer is clarity in phrasing, and that's what I learned from a technique called bel canto and a teacher with whom I worked for 32 years. And I was lucky because I worked with Max Margolyes from 1965 until he died, and when he died, he said, now, I don't want you, on his deathbed, he told me, I don't want you to worry. Don't worry. Do you just remember it's about clarity and phrasing, and you'll be able to sing until you fall down. So,
well, he was
and
right.
You know, it is, I have to say, a combination of things. I think it's health, it's luck, it's the training. But also, I'm just incredibly grateful because it's a miracle to me.
It's a miracle to me too. I mean, and it's and I say that with all great respect and as the compliment it's meant to be. And how many folk singers in the village in the '60s? You were in that whole scene: Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, Dave Van Ronk, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell. How many of them were taking classical voice lessons and learning the bel canto vocal technique? I can't imagine there were too many.
No, and I was lucky. I was working like a maniac in 1965, but I was losing my voice all the time because although I'd studied piano and I was a classically trained pianist, and I'd sung with the opera choruses and with the choirs, the church choirs, the school choirs, sung on the radio with my father, sung, but I did not know what to do. I was desperate, and I was losing my voice all the time. I had a very, if you hear those first records of mine, they're very low. I'm singing way down here because that's what I knew how to do. And I was desperate, and I asked two people. I asked Harry Belafonte's pianist, Ray Bogoslav, his guitar player, rather, I asked him who he would recommend, and I asked a couple who ran the Indian Hill camp in Lenox, Massachusetts, the arts camp. And Morty and Mordecai Bauman and his wife told me the same name as Ray Bogoslaw. So eventually I called this man, Max Margulies, and it turned out that he lived right next door to me.
Oh,
and I went
convenient.
Over to see him, and it was that was how it began. And I would stand in the harp of his piano, staring at the paintings of his friends, Achille Gorky and William, what's his name, the big New York painter. And I would stand there, and I would think, shouldn't I be at Max's Kansas City? Everybody, nobody else is taking lessons like
yeah.
this.
And you know, the other thing, when you went to Greenwich Village, went to New York, and started, you know, pursuing your career as a singer full time, it was also very unusual for anybody to sing other people's songs. Most of them were singer songwriters themselves. There's a famous story about Joni Mitchell playing "Both Sides Now" for you on the telephone. Tell us how that came to be.
That's right. She was with. She'd gone to a club because she was in love with the guitarist or the drummer in Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And Al Kooper took her home because she was so good-looking. And she also said that she could write songs. And when he heard the song that she played him first, he said, oh, I got to call my friend Judy Collins. I often think, and he knew my number by heart, I often think, what if he had called, I don't know, Buffy, St. Marie?
Yeah, sure. The serendipity of all of that is amazing.
Yeah, no, it's extraordinary.
And by the way, do you happen to know how Joni Mitchell's health is these days? Because I understand it's been she's had some difficult challenges. Have you been in touch with her over the years?
Last month in February, I was nominated for a Grammy, and along with the wonderful Ari Hess, we wrote and performed an album called Silver Skies Blue, as you know. And Clive Davis called me and said, would you sing at my pre-Grammy party? And I said, of course. And he said, Joni's going to be there, and I want you to come and sing Both Sides Now for her. So I did, and she was there. She was in a wheelchair. She's recovering slowly but surely from an aneurysm and or a stroke. I'm not sure which it was, but it certainly took her out of the game for a few months, a couple of years. But I think she's doing better.
Good. That's good to hear. You know, I wonder when it comes to an iconic tune like Send in the Clowns, which you've sung thousands of times, tens of thousands of times maybe, when you return to it for this album, which is just with this marvelous pianist, Russell Walden, phenomenal player.
Oh.
And you managed to sustain interest. Not only is it all the same composer, Mr. Sondheim, that almost all the tunes are ballads, and all of them are accompanied only by piano. So you've got no orchestration to distract people. You've got no other stuff happening. And you managed to sustain amazing interest. When you come back to a song like that, a song you know so, so well, is it a matter of being purposeful about taking a fresh, new approach, or are you trying to sort of deepen your understanding of the old one, or how do you look at it?
I just need to sing it like a Judy Collins song. That's all I need to do. And that's not a thought process. That's not a scientific examination. That is doing what I've always done with the song. Of course, it always comes out different because every... every performance of it in concert is different because I'm thinking slightly different things. I'm in a different room. I'm with a different group of people. So it's always fresh because it's the present. It's in the moment. So that's where I like to stay, in the moment, with the song, with the lyric that I have devoured and digested and also learned about and think about in today's thought rather than 50 years ago, 40 years ago. But the idea of the song is still the overarching intention. And the fact that it comes out sounding like Judy Collins is just a mystery, but it does.
It does indeed. And the moment that we are enjoying very much this afternoon is with the singer-songwriter, author, filmmaker, activist Judy Collins. She's appearing at the Columbia Festival of the Arts on Saturday night. We'll have more with Judy Collins when we come back from a quick break. We'll take your calls, questions, and comments. 410-662-8780 is our number. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. More with Judy Collins when we come back. Stick around.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
No one here to guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still you're not alone. No one is alone. Truly no one is alone.
Welcome back to Midday. My guest today, the great iconic singer Judy Collins. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. I'll be joined by Francis Sellers of the Washington Post, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist E.R. Shipp of Morgan State University, and Andy Green of the Baltimore Sun. If you woke up this morning and said, you know what, I think I'd like to chat amiably with Judy Collins, here's your chance. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here at Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Judy, it's a sacrilege for me to be speaking over a recording that you've made that is so beautiful, and I apologize for that, but
it's all right.
Such are the vagaries of radio. You wrote in 2011 in a memoir that my life has taken me from innocence to rage and back again. That's a great
guess
way.
Guess where I am. Guess where I am now.
I'm not going with rage.
Take a crack at that. I express a lot of rage on Facebook, and I have to watch my language there. Yes, well, that's very true.
I mean, and the fact that you've had, you know, great success as an artist certainly by no means has inoculated you from hardship in your life, and you've been very open about that.
Well, I mean, these things happen to you, and I'm thinking you might be thinking about my new book, Cravings, and that talks about my eating disorder. But eating disorders, of course, are not just about thin, skinny, mini girls who fight the food and are bulimic or anorexic. They're about everybody who has an issue with food, including people who weigh 500 pounds. So it's all the same illness, and it's all the same preoccupation. And I believe that it's all because of an allergy to sugar, wheat, flour, grains, and corn. And if that sounds simplistic, in a way it is. It's a science. It's scientific, really. If you take those out of your diet and you have some fat and some dressing and butter and full-fatted cheese and eat 3 meals a day. And, you know, it's pretty healthy.
Let's listen to another clip from the album. This is a great Sondheim tune called Move On.
Stop worrying where you're going, move on. If you can know where you're going, you've gone. Just keep moving on. I chose and my world was shaken, so what? The choice may have been mistaken, the choosing was not. You have to move on.
The choice may have been mistaken, the choosing was not. You've had to choose your way out of a lot of things. Your eating disorders are one of a few things that you've been very public about. You had some addiction issues. You lost a son who was 35 years old. You've had some really difficult things. Has it been cathartic, or has it been helpful to you personally to be so public about it? Obviously, it will be helpful to people who say, hey, that's Judy Collins. She made it through. So can I. So I'm sure it's very helpful to the public. But has it been what role has your publicity about those challenges played in your own life?
Well, sometimes people write journals which are very forthright, and I wrote journals for years. I can't read my own writing anymore, so I don't write them, but I do keep journaling in some way or other. And so writing about these issues has been fundamental to my mental health as well as my physical and spiritual health, and it's helped me to get through these things. You know, one of the things that's always recommended to people who are going through whatever life presents is to journal. I know one of the most exciting exhibitions I ever went to was at the Morgan Library in New York, and they had people's journals from all walks of life, farmers and dairy farmers and ship captains and kings and courtiers and artists, writers. It was amazing, because you think about that, and that's very, why do people do that? Because they want to know what happened, but they also, if they get past the era of the weather only and what Grandma Martha said, and they get into what they're feeling, that seems to be very cathartic and helpful. I have found it to be.
Here's another little clip from the album. This is a Sondheim tune, Not a Day Goes By. Friends in their 70s and 80s who do spend a good amount of time thinking about what they have been through, not necessarily thinking about what they're going to be going through. And when you sing a lyric like that, it's easy for me as a, you know, an outside observer to say, well, one of the reasons that lyric is so, your communicative power of that lyric is so good is that you've had some of these experiences that I've just read about. I mean, I've never talked to you about them. Do you apply specific memories, you know, specific things that have happened to you when you're imbuing an interpretation with your own artistry? Is it conscious?
Oh, absolutely.
It's conscious, right?
Oh, yes. Very conscious, very personal, immediate, very immediate. Not only when you're singing, I love this song. I had a hard time singing this song, I'll tell you.
I bet.
Was a challenge to me. I couldn't get around it without feeling that I was overdoing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
that's a danger.
Finally,
you're right. That's a danger. Yeah.
It's a danger because, first of all, a lot of the interpretations of the Sondheim songs are over the top. And that's the way people perceive them. They hear them that way in the theater. I couldn't find my way through this song until I remember trying to do it out in at the Fairmont. We did the whole series of Sondheims out there a couple of years ago, and I was really lost. I didn't really know what to, it took me a couple of years to get these songs under my 25 years to figure out exactly which ones I was going to do, and a couple of years to do them. And Russell and I, Russell's a genius and wonderful, wonderful pianist, as you can hear. But in our first renditions of the song, you would have run screaming from the room, I think. But finally, now I can hear it and say, "Oh my God, I got to sing that Friday when I'm at the Beacon, and next week when I'm with you." And it's a wonderful song. So, and yes, it's very personal. And I like to think that when I'm singing in a concert, people are going through their own. There they are. They're sitting in the audience. They're alone. It's dark. They don't have the cell phone on, thank God. And they're thinking and using their memories and their immediate responses to do some psychic cleanup while they're listening to me.
Yeah.
That's what I think happens to people, if I'm lucky, if they're lucky.
Judy Collins is my guest this afternoon. 410-662-8780 is our number here on Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Here's my guess, Judy, about why you're able to do that. You have the courage to be understated about some of these, all of these tunes. And I think you're exactly right that when we hear them on stage, particularly in the context of musicals, it's easy for the artist to overdo them. But the other thing is that you start with musical excellence, and that makes it emotional. You don't start by saying, I'm going to be emotional about this. Because I think
if you do that,
then the excellence falls away. All of a sudden you're out of tune, and
you're just not
singing the tune. You're not communicating.
That's right. It's like the drunk going out to play the drunk. You've got to get over the drunk before you can play the drunk properly.
Indeed. Monroe in O'Donnell Heights, welcome to Midday with the iconic Judy Collins.
Good afternoon, Tom, and hi to Miss Collins. There have been quite a few songs that I have enjoyed with her over the years. Send in the Clowns, sometimes when I listen to it, I get a tear or two in my eye. Yeah. And if you haven't done it before, please try Amazing Grace. That is the most spiritual version of that song that I have heard. I will hang up and listen.
Well, thank you for your call, Monroe. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, and actually Monroe's doing pretty good if he can get by with just a tear or two when he hears you sing. John writes an email, Judy. He says, one of the great songs of the rock era was written about you. It's by Stephen Stills. It's called The Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. Now, you had a book called Sweet, S-W-E-E-T, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. This was, of course, the tune S-U-I-T-E, Judy Blue Eyes. John asks, what do you think when you hear it more than 40 years after it was written, and are you still in touch with Stephen Stills?
Well, you played a little bit of it in the show, and of course I just go crazy when I hear that phrase come up, da-da-da-da. And as a matter of fact, we've remained friends all these years. And as a matter of fact, we are going on tour starting at the end of July.
Terrific.
Stephen Stills and I are going to do about a 40-concert tour. And I'm just thrilled. I mean, he's so brilliant. You know, we're doing our rehearsals, and just to be sitting in the room next to him and have him start to play the guitar, I mean, it still just drives me crazy.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, we will look forward to that. That's right. Now, how do you put a set list together with an old boyfriend? That seems to be fraught with problems.
Well, we've known each other a long time. We've been talking about this for at least 10 years. And we, you know, we're older and wiser, I hope, or maybe stupider, I don't know. But we don't argue about anything. And we pretty much agree about what we should and what we shouldn't do. And so I just, and again, my wonderful musical director, Russell, is the magic potion in this brew, because he's so steady and so, dependable. The minute we started rehearsing, Stephen sent me a note and said, "Oh, I love Russell. He reminds me of George Martin, and he reminds me of Arif Mardin." George, of course, did
great
the
producer of the Beatles, right?
The Beatles, so. and Arif Mardin produced me, sent in the clowns with me, but also produced, you know, got the Bee Gees to sing high and said that was the way they should go, and recorded Aretha Franklin and everybody else. So I'm in a safe zone with Russell to help us, and we've got a fantastic group, and we're going to have a ball.
You indeed are. That's terrific. If you wouldn't mind, we're going to go to the phones. And there's lots of folks who would love to touch base with Judy Collins. Luther in White Marsh, welcome to Midday with Judy Collins.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I feel privileged and honored. Ms. Collins, you're just blessing me with your voice. I'm sitting here eating my lunch. And and I said, I've got to call in and see if Ms. Collins can help me out a little bit.
Good. Good.
Because you're a singer, is that right, Luther?
Yes. Yes, sir. I'm a singer, and of many years, when I was younger, of course, my vocal range was higher. If you're familiar with Christian, I'm sure you are, singers like Lionel Harris, Steve Green, it was in that range. But now I'm more like a Melvin Franklin of the Temptations, you know. So my range has really gotten lower, and so that's my question is to, if you can just give me one pointer, just one, of something that I can possibly do to possibly get my range back where it used to be, or at least close to it. Is there something special I need to do?
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Luther. So it's one thing, Judy, to maintain your range throughout a career. It's another thing to get it back if it's faltered.
Yeah. My routine is to get to the date, sit down at the piano, and for about a half hour before I sing, I begin to do this. La, 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 getting a through line.
High and low.
Top to bottom.
Yeah.
That's all I can advise.
All right. Well, there you've gotten your free voice lesson from Judy Collins here on Midday. John in Baltimore, let's try to sneak in a call from you. Welcome to Midday with Judy Collins.
Hi, Judy. I saw you the week of my high school graduation in 1967 at the Forest Hills Tennis Stadium with the Love and Spoonful, one of the best memories of my life.
Wow.
And I wonder, over the period of your long career, do you remember specific concerts like that? And do you
I remember
have special
John
memories?
I remember that particular concert. Yes, I do. Sometimes they come to mind. Sometimes they fade. You know, they say if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. But I do remember a lot of the highlights. And I'm glad that you enjoyed that show. The Loving Spoonful, darling John Sebastian, I'm crazy about him.
Let me ask you, Judy, a question about recording, because you're on this tear with all of these albums, and good luck. We'll keep our fingers crossed for you for the Grammys. But I guess the Grammys have already happened, haven't they? I've lost
they
track
have.
Of the time.
Good luck on the Grammys is always a good wish.
That's true. That's true. That's a perennial wish. Yeah, I'm losing
that's
track.
That's a perennial
it's
wish.
Yeah. But when you record a song, it's much different than singing it live, when you're doing it for posterity. I mean, when you're in a room, you've got, as you say, you know, the particular ambiance, the particular exigencies of that day, that room, those people, and there's a spontaneity that, you know, you invest in the song that you can. But when you're recording it, it's forever and ever. How do you know, when you've done the right take? How do you know that that's the one that has all of the qualities? What are you listening for in yourself as you decide to put an album together?
I'm listening for Judy Collins. And it's that simple and that complicated. And, of course, in the studio, you have a very controlled situation. And I control as much as possible in my live shows so that I sound the way I want to sound. And that's true in the studio, equally important. To sound the way you want to sound. And then you get a chance to do a number of takes. And then, of course, we do listen to what we think is the best take. And then we might have to change a couple of notes here and there, maybe a line. But fundamentally, it's cut and paste. But you've got to get the bulk of the track, first of all. So you want to do a full through take. I would say five is about my... I usually hit the mark at about five. About the fifth take is right. And then if I have to repair a line or two, I'm in good shape.
And, of course, you have to rely on your colleagues. I mean, people like Russell in this instance. I mean, you know, another set of ears never hurts.
Oh, no. It's a team production. And our engineer, Alan Silverman, who has... I've worked with him since 1984, and he's produced and mixed and recorded everything that I've done since 1984. Once I found this genius, I didn't let him go.
Judy Collins, her latest CD is called A Love Letter to Stephen Sondheim. She will be appearing at the Columbia Festival of the Arts on Saturday night at 8 o'clock in the Jim Rouse Theater in Columbia. We've got a link to details on our website, wypr.org/midday. Judy, it has been a great joy to talk to you. Thank you so much, and break a leg here in Columbia, Maryland on Saturday. Thanks.
What a treat. Thank you so much. God bless and have a beautiful day.
Thanks. You too. You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up after a break, it's Theater Thursday here on Midday. We're going to take a trip back to the 1970s and a play about Donnie Hathaway. And as we go to break, here's Judy Collins singing music of Stephen Sondheim. This is I'm Still Here.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.